Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Today is the most auspicious day of Sri Nityananda Ram, Avirbhava Mahotsav. And we're going to, Gopalacharya Prabhu has kindly asked me again,
2 years in a row.
Oh.
I was here last year, same time. But I'm hoping I will speak about take a different approach to Lord Nityananda's life, pastimes, history, dynasty, ancestors, etc. Ajano lambita bujao kanaka avadato sankirtanaika pitaro kamalayitaksho vishvambaro dijavaro karuna avataro vande jagat priyakaro karuna avataro. We are very, very blessed. Very blessed. No offense, we don't actually know how blessed we are to be in the position that we're in. Somehow or other, here we are. And I want to point that out to you today in one way or another, more than one way, if I can. Name Nityananda, tumi rupe Nityananda, e tumi Nityananda, Rama Murti Manta. Which means your name is Nityananda, your form is Nityananda, you are indeed the abode of eternal bliss. Nitya Ananda is the abode of eternal bliss. And you are non-different from whom? Sri Balaramji. Non-different than Balaram, which is the first expansion of the Godhead, Vasudev Sankarshan. If you look at the Vishnu Tattva and how Vishnu expands in the spiritual world, in the material world, first you have Vishnu and then you have Sankarshan. Or if you like, you have Vasudev and then you have Balaram. Nityananda is Balaram, not different. Different Leela, different pastime. God comes as an avatar, or does his Leela, his pastimes, in various forms of avatars. Avatar means one who descends. And he does that in different eras or epochs of the universe, different yugas, or ages of the universe. And he does different things, but mainly he comes to raise consciousness, expunge or neutralize lower consciousness, what to speak of destructive consciousness, in many forms eternally. Whenever the material creation is manifest, God will be down. At some point in time, he'll be here to play out his Leela. So Nityananda is Balaram. He is also Anantashesha. Anantashesha. Ananta means the end or the ultimate. Anta means end. Ananta means no end. The ultimate. Unending or unlimited. He personally takes the form of all the paraphernalia that God requires. Wow. Interesting point. He takes the form of all the stuff God might need while he's here. Well, what stuff does he need? Well, you need lots of stuff. You brought half of it with you. I see some of you have. We need stuff. God needs stuff. He needs even more stuff than we do. Really. He does. It's okay. You can have stuff. As long as you're not attached to it. Right? So our stuff is generally, it's not awake. It's asleep. It's material. It's dense. It's thick. It's, you know. What's the other word for that?
Solid.
No. Inert, unconscious. Is anything around God that's inert and unconscious? No, nothing. Even things that you think should be inert and unconscious. With Krishna, no good, won't do. Next, bring in the next one. Let's see. Ooh, this one's wide awake. If he's got a podium in front of him, that podium is wide awake. Wide awake. Fully conscious, fully perceptive. That's the definition of God. Can you imagine having stuff like that? What must that be like? I'd say it's really exciting. Well, how do we get there? Same way. Huh? Isn't it wonderful? It's so simple. It's the same way. How do we get there? Just get more conscious. You'll be there in no time. That's all you have to do. Become more conscious. You can be part of God's stuff. Only we'll be, you know, in some rasa, in some lila with God as beings. Well, I guess we could be blades of grass too, but, you know. I'm going to put in for at least a humanoid type of, at least that. I mean, come on. We want to have fun. No one has more fun than Krishna. Let's get that straight. Radha Govinda, no one has more fun than these two. My wife affectionately calls them the hooligans because of some of the pastimes carried out. She does this out of love, so please understand that. They are hooligans, I mean, really. Because the things they like to do, just like what kids do, aren't they like what children do? Aren't we supposed to become like that? Childlike? Hang out with the hooligans and do all kinds of wonderful things. Yeah. I know some of you are very uncomfortable as I say that, but that's okay. So Balaram Nityananda, what does he do? He takes the form of God's, Krishna's bed, his pillow, his slippers, his umbrella, his garments, his chair, his harmonium, his kartals, his mridanga. Oh, let us not forget his flute. Some girl was here playing flute today. Beautiful. Beautiful. Krishna's flute is conscious too. He kisses the flute, it kisses him back. Oh yes. Oh yes. Okay, now, what does he also represent? Nityananda Ram. Electromagnetism. Let's get scientific here for all you scientists in the crowd, for all you physicists. Electromagnetism. How do we see electromagnetism? What's the obvious way to see it? Gravity. Planets are in orbit, right? Don't the planets spin ever so beautifully? In orbit, in the galaxy, in the solar system. Do they crash? No. They don't even crash. You can read about all the people that crash on the roads here in Ireland, can you not? Unfortunately, many people crash. Not the planets. And the gravity that holds us on the Earth, how can we be on a big spinning ball in the middle of space, traveling at, I don't know what speed that is, that the Earth travels at, and not fall off the planet? Gravity. That's Balaram. That's Nityananda. All the laws of physics present here in the material world, where objects travel at the speed of light. Speed of light, that's the speed that they're trying to go for, isn't it? How are they going to get into the deep, deep galaxy, deep space? How will they get there? Speed of light, we're working toward it. Is that the fastest speed you can get here in the material world, speed of light? No, it's not. Well, I thought it was. It isn't. What about the speed of mind? That's faster? Oh, yes. Right now, close your eyes. There you are in Vrindavan. Can you see? Can you feel it? Can you smell it? Right now, you're in Vrindavan. You see? Speed of mind. You're in Vrindavan. Now you're not, if you're looking at me again. Is there a faster speed than that? Yeah. You're kidding. Not in the material world so much. Speed of spirit. Faster yet than the speed of mind. Who controls the speed of mind and the speed of spirit? Nityanandan. This guy controls everything. He's a busy man. Full schedule. Busy. Controlling all this stuff. How many planets here in our universe? No one knows. Of course, this is the only one with life on it, right? Are we clear on that part? There's only life here, right? Or is that a mistake, perhaps? Yeah, it's a mistake, but that's okay. It's life everywhere. So he controls all of that. So what's an example of the speed of mind? The yogic mystic cities, isn't that speed of mind? Yoga cities, anima, lagima, prapti, all these special powers that the yogis develop. They can actually transform or transmute or transfer themselves. When I say go to Vrindavan, we go to Vrindavan in our minds. We can do it. The yogis can actually take their physical body. They can when you separate the molecules, dematerialize physical body and then rematerialize it someplace else. Can they not do this? Yeah. Who controls that? Nityananda. And I'm going to throw this in just for curiosity sake, just a small point. They've developed electromagnetic gravitics. Have you heard of that? Electromagnetic gravitics? Anti-gravity. You'll know them better as flying saucers. And the way the flying saucer works is that gravity exerts a pull, holds you down. A flying saucer exerts an opposite pull, which neutralizes gravity and releases it. So up it goes. I mean, it's a little more technical than that, but really, that's all there is to it. And sometimes they say flying saucers disappear and then reappear someplace else a moment later. That's all documented. No, I'm not really an ET guy, but I'm throwing this in. And they reappear somewhere else. How do they do that? Speed of light. They also can do speed of light. And this technology was developed and functioning here on Earth in 1954. Electromagnetic gravitics, as in gravity. 1954. When's the last time you flew in a flying saucer? Not recently, I'll bet. Well, where is it? Why aren't we all in flying saucer speed, flying at the speed of light? Because they repressed that technology. And we all know who they is. Powers that be. Demons that be. I mean, powers that be. Controlling everything. Okay, we won't spend too much time on that. 1954, can you imagine? Just so we can all burn fossil fuels and contaminate the earth. That was the option, the other option. Well, that's a much better option, isn't it? Rather than something that produces no pollution and will get you there 10 times as fast or 100 times as fast. There's a demon somewhere, pulling some strings, if that's true. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the thousand-headed Ananta Shesha. He's the serpent energy of Vishnu. You've seen Vishnu lying on the serpent couch? That's him. How many heads does he have? Well, they say 1,000. How many does he need? He's got that many on any given time. That's how many he's got. And his thousands of miles of the abode of Lord Krishna's transcendental glories. As valuable jewels are kept in a favored place, the jewel-like glories of Krishna are kept in the jewelry case of Lord Ananta's mouths. Beautiful. Krishna's pastimes, like valuable jewels, are kept in the jewelry case of Anantashesha's mouths. Who writes that kind of stuff? Wonderful. Janavi, is it Janavi or Janava? Nityananda's wife. Janava. And her sister, Vasudha, was her sister, younger sister. When Janava married Nityananda, Nityananda was, one day he said to Chaitanya, he says, "Lord, you're driving me nuts. Driving me crazy. Why is that?" "Well, you put me on this earth to serve you. Then you send me to all the holy places. And I go by myself and I go on Tirtha Yatra, on pilgrimage to all the holy places. And I don't see you. You're not here. You're not around. You don't reveal yourself to me as Chaitanya. I look for you everywhere. You've brought me here, I know. Where are you?" "And then you turn me into an avadut. Whatever a renunciate may be, an avadut is way beyond that. Very renounced, absolutely renounced, attached to nothing. Avadutes sometimes forget to dress, put on clothes. Doesn't occur to them." I think Nityananda went around dressed for the most part. I don't think he was all the time. When he was in real avadutta mode. Highly renounced, absorbed in God consciousness, in meditation. He said, "Then finally I meet you, and we come together in, when did you first meet him? In Navadvip, no? And then you stay a short time with me, and you move to Jagannath Puri. You know, I mean, then you tell me, get married and have babies. I mean, I don't know if I'm coming or gone. But what's his number one service, Nityananda? Surrender. Surrender. That's why he's here. If he says, become my serpent couch, he becomes a serpent couch. If he says, become a book, he becomes a book. If he says, become a flute, he becomes a flute. I wonder when we could approach that level of surrender. Not so easy. You could say, well, we don't really have those abilities. But it's not about the abilities as much as it is about the mentality of surrender. So there Nityananda was at his wedding ceremony, years later. And he married the daughter of Suryadas Pandit, a Brahmin. Came from a Brahmin family. Brahmins are the priestly class, intellectual class. Generally people who are more spiritually inclined. There are still Brahmins in India, especially in the south. I mean, they're everywhere. But then some of them don't maintain Brahmanism like they used to. In the south, more so. So back in Chaitanya's time, most of the associates of Chaitanya were Brahmins. And they were all born in Brahmin families, pretty much. Not all of them. Many of them, let's put it that way. So was Nityananda. So Suryadas Pandit was a Brahmin, and Nityananda wanted to marry his daughter, Janava. All of this was arranged, to make a long story short. And then one day, they were still at the house. I mean, this is days after the marriage, after the wedding. And they were serving. Nityananda, who was taking his lunch, and his wife, Janava, was bringing in food for his lunch and presenting with plates. And her younger sister, Vasudha, was also bringing in plates. And of course, in those times, as women wore saris, they were meant to keep their heads covered with one side of the sari. You see some of the ladies here do that. They're meant to keep their heads covered. And she had a plate in this hand, Vasudha, and a plate in this hand, and her sari slipped off of her head. And she knew that she had to cover her head. What was she going to do with two hands full of plates? Well, like you would do, she manifested two more hands. Now she's got four hands and two empty hands. And with one, she put her sari back upon her head so as to be chaste and properly presented. But this did not escape the eye of Nityananda. I went, oh. So this is the younger sister, like the older sister. So immediately he went to, perhaps after lunch, to Suryadas Pandit, and he said, I will take your youngest daughter as my wife, if that is okay with you. Yes, Nityananda Mahashay, you may take her. I was hoping you would take her. Both girls, since they were the manifestation of Lakshmiji, divine Shakti of Vishnu, her energy manifestations, energetic manifestations of the goddess of fortune, both of them meditated upon Nityananda as their husband. Since when? Since being born. So there's nothing untoward in this. Vasudha got her wish to have Nityananda also as her husband. The goddess of fortune always remains with Vishnu. Who else does she remain with? You can attract her for a while. She'll come and stay with you for a while, maybe an entire lifetime. She'll come and bring wealth and good fortune and success and beauty and health, fame, so many things into your life. Will she stay forever? I don't think so. Not down here in the material world. Not usually. However, if you have Vishnu within your heart, and you have a very close connection to Vishnu, then where else will she go? She'll stay at your house. Because Vishnu stays with you. Isn't that lovely? Okay. I said at the beginning we were blessed, so I mean to explain that to you now. I was walking yesterday and meditating a lot, actually, on Nityananda for the last few days. Ask him to show us some nectar, give us something. Show me something I haven't thought of, or I haven't heard of, or I haven't read before. Maybe you've read it. But first, let's start by saying there are four ages in the universe, the four yugas. Most of us know that. Satya Yuga, the golden age. Treta Yuga, the silver age. Dwapara Yuga, the bronze age. And Kali Yuga, the iron age. They last a long time, and it is a cycle that keeps repeating itself, just like the four seasons keep repeating themselves here in the physical world. This is similar, but they're universal seasons. Don't have much to do with the weather. Well, maybe in Kali Yuga, they would have more to do with the weather, I suppose. Especially when it's unsettled and unpredictable. That's Kali Yuga. So anyway, there are four dharmas, or a dharma for each yuga, for each age. They're different. Satya yoga is, what is it, 1,796,000 years in duration. People live to be 100,000 years old.
What?
100,000 years old. What is the Dharma? What is the spiritual practice for the age? It's meditation. Sitting quietly for hours on end, yoga, meditation, and focusing. That's the Yuga Dharma. In the Silver Age, Treta Yuga, which is, I think, 1,296,000 years in duration, people lived to be 10,000 years in age. 10,000. That's a great difference. And the Yuga Dharma is sacrifice. Very elaborate sacrifices. We could look at the Golden Age, Satya Yuga, as the Brahman Age, where you sit quietly and you meditate. A lot of people like to sit quietly and meditate now. Something wrong with that? No. You can do that. But we're not as adept or as adapted as we could be in this particular age to sit for hours on end in meditation. It's hard for us to focus, truthfully. So if a golden age is for Brahmins, primarily, or is the Brahminical age, then the Silver Age, Treta Yuga, where elaborate sacrifices were performed, like fire sacrifices, where a lot of wealth was spent and charity given away to the Brahmins and other people, and these are big, big undertakings, sometimes lasting more than a year. That was the Kshatriya Age, where the warriors or the people who governed, the kings, the princes, the people who ruled everybody else, that was their age. They could afford to do sacrifices like that. Then, now, in Dwapara Yuga, where people live to be 1,000 years old, which is called the Bronze Age, then it became temple worship. Worshipping the deity in the temple. Well, we still worship the deity in the temple, as you can see here. There are still worship going on in churches, mosques, various places like that, even now. So that was the Vaishya Age. And the Vaishyas are the business people and the farmers and anybody who produces economics. But now we're in Kali Yuga. How long have you been in Kali Yuga? Well, 5,000 years. How long does it last? It's 432,000 years long. So, we'll be in for a while. And these other systems of Dharma, not that they're wrong, they're not encouraged in this age. What's encouraged? Chanting. Harinam, the holy names of God. Why? Because anybody can do it. This is the Shudra age. That's what this is. Shudras are workers, craftspeople, tradespeople, on the one hand. And it states in the Vedas that in Kali Yuga, there are no Brahmins and no Kshatriyas. There are no real kings, no real governors, no real leaders. Those are Kshatriyas. And no real Brahmins. There are people who act in or function in those capacities, but there aren't any qualified ones like you would have found in previous ages. So many of us are not that qualified, as you can see in a democracy, and who governs you. Most of the people are not very qualified. So in this age, we're encouraged to chant the holy names of God, which anybody can do, chant and dance, even the children can do it. So this is the special mercy of Chaitanya and Nitai. So I was thinking of it from this perspective, with these things in mind. Conversely, what is the highest manifestation of the Godhead? Well, I want to look at Ram, Lord Ram, who was here when? What age?
Treta Yuga.
What age? What? Silver Age, right? Sorry, the legs don't work as well these days. Treta Yuga. So Ram was an ideal leader. He was born a prince. He was supposed to become a king. He did eventually become a king. He married Sita. His wife was a princess. And his brother was Lakshman. Ram is no different than Vishnu, is no different than Krishna, is no different than Chaitanya. It's the same manifestation of the Godhead in a different form. So how did Ram, what was Ram's approach? Well, he was an ideal man. Actually, Ram was 50% Vishnu Tattva, God energy. 50% pure God energy. What was the other 50%? Human. He was 50% human. 50-50. That's why he'd get caught up in lamentation. He did quite a bit of lamenting from time to time. Well, that's my opinion. But 50% is not my opinion. That's the way it is. So Ram was banished to the forest by some trick, some device, and he went because he did his duty. He did the Dharma. He did the right thing no matter what. Even if it was on false pretenses, he still went. So he was an ideal man and a king. Sita was the Shakti, his Shakti, his female energy. She was the personification of the goddess of fortune, his Shakti. She was his consort. And their relationship was expressed in a socially acceptable manner, according to society, right? And even when she was kidnapped by Ravan and held for a time, until Ram and the monkey armies came and released her, she still had to go through a purgation, a cleansing ceremony, and walk through fire. And when she disappeared into the fire, Agni Dev, the fire god, took her and brought her out the other end. Why did they make her do this? Because she had stayed in the house of the demon Ravan, therefore she was impure or contaminated. Was she impure or contaminated? Not technically. She wasn't. But that's how society would look at it. Correct? If you're a lady and you stay at the house of another man and not at your own home all night long, and even nothing happens, do we not all look askance? Well, I wonder what she was doing there last night. Don't we do that normally? Yes, we do. Even back in Treta Yuga, my friends. Even Sita. So she came out of the fire. She hadn't done anything, but, you know, for appearance purposes. And then they assumed the throne, and Ram ruled. Okay? So that's Ram. So now, in Dwapara Yuga, the next Yuga, who came along? Govinda. Govinda. He did it a little differently. Now you think as these yugas progress that the manifestations of Godhead and what they offer would also go downhill like the yugas. They diminish in their power and potency. But what we're seeing is quite the opposite. This is the key point. Quite the opposite. How so? Well, along comes our friend Krishna. What's he? He's a king and a lover. That's what he is. Well, what's he mostly known for? Depends what viewpoint you're taking, correct? Depends. Radha, Sri Radha, there she is, next to him, looking beautiful, as usual. She is his Shakti, his divine feminine expansion, his consort. Okay? And their relationship was expressed only in Krishna's childhood growing up in Vrindavan. When? Out in the open? No. Under cover of darkness. Under the full moon. Dancing in the dell. The rasa dance. And the gopis, the coward maidens, all there singing, dancing, playing, decorating, all the things that they did. So the ideal was expressed through singing, dancing, and loving intimacy. Whoa. That's very different from Ram, isn't it? Oh, yeah, I'd say. Now, did everybody get to see that? Who was living in Vrindavan and Mathura at that time? Oh, no. And that only went on in the first part of life when they were quite young. And then Krishna took up his duties as a prince and a king, and he had his own kingdom, which he built in Dwarka. And he had many, many wives as a king. And that was his kingly side, or princely side. And he maintained the kingdom according to dharma and social acceptance, just like Ram did. Correct? But the intimacy of Radha and Krishna Leela is the key part. And a lot of people don't understand it. They just think he's a guy just trying to party down. No. Not so simple. Okay. So are we progressing here? Well, that's a much more highly potent expression of the Godhead than Ram's was. Even though there's some overlap. Right? So here we are now in Kali Yuga. And who appears? Chaitanya and Nityananda Ram. Both born in Brahmin families. Twice born, initiated. Extremely intelligent. Both scholars. Chaitanya in particular was a scholar. So Chaitanya was the manifestation of God, of Vishnu, of Krishna, in Kali Yuga. Well, how long ago was this in this Iron Age? 500 years ago. That's nothing. That's yesterday. 500 years ago in time. And so, What was Chaitanya? Was he a king and a leader? And no. He was a scholar and a devotee. Essentially. First part of his life, he was a scholar. He studied all the Shastras, all the scriptures. Learned Sanskrit. Learned all the things that Brahmins were taught. And he learned them. How long did it take him to learn any particular book or shastra? Heard it once? Or read it once? Quite a mind on. Defeated various pundits, scholars, famous scholars, famous people who would debate. They'd like to go around and debate. Philosophy that was very popular back then. So he defeat them all, no matter how old they were. Even when he was 12, he would defeat them. And he had his own class of students who learned from him when he was still a teenager, which is unusual. So he was a scholar and a devotee who was a devotee of Krishna and entered into the pastimes of Radha Krishna. So Chaitanya was actually the combined form of Radha and Krishna. Both Krishna, God, and his Shakti, his feminine energy. Why did he take that form? Because he wanted to experience what it would be like for Radha to be with Krishna. And he wanted to experience what it would be like for Krishna to be with Radha, all in the one incarnation. And the bliss, the joy, the unadulterated happiness and loving exchange, the mellow of Madhurya Rasa, the sweetness, was so overpowering and overwhelming that he'd fall apart from time to time, so to speak. He would lose his sense of his presence, where he was, where he was located. And reasonably early on, he was diagnosed as being epileptic because he'd have a fit sometimes and he'd pass out and his body would shake. Now that is epilepsy. Interestingly, in Vedic astrology, Lord Chaitanya's birth information is actually very commonly found in various books written about him. I mean, it was only 500 years ago. And you can easily calculate his birth chart. And at the time that he was born on full moon night. And the moon was in Leo, in the sky, according to Vedic calculation. And right near the moon was Ketu. Ketu is a shadow planet. We call it Chaya Graha in Sanskrit. And a moon Ketu yoga, or yoga means planetary combination, is a yoga for epilepsy, among other things. It's also a yoga for a genius madman. So, was Lord Chaitanya mad? Well, he wasn't mad as in certifiable. He was mad in intoxication with love of God, in that sense. You can see examples in material, not to be compared with Lord Chaitanya exactly, but you can see among humans, people who have combinations like this, on the one hand, can be very brilliant. They can get powerful realizations and revelations and epiphanies and words from God or from higher beings, revelations, that sort of thing. It's quite common. But many of them are not so grounded. This is the point. With feet on the ground, you know, they're sort of, as they say here in Ireland, sometimes off with the fairies. It's good to be off with the fairies, spiritually speaking, from time to time. But it is not good to be ungrounded or off with the fairies all day long, every day. It's not recommended. So Lord Chaitanya, because of his experiencing the bliss of the relationship, the intimacy of, between Radha and Krishna, his body actually used to come apart at the joints from time to time. So Nityananda and he spent much time together, and Nityananda served him in that capacity. Now, to continue this analogy, if I'm keeping you awake, I hope I am, let's go again with Ram, Krishna, and Chaitanya. And I'm going to show you again the subtle differences between the three. Now, when what's the famous verse? It's escaping me now. In the Bhagavad Gita, when there's a rise in your religion and a rise of, and that's when Godhead comes. What is it? Yida yida hi dharmasya glanir bhavati marita abhyutanam madharmasya tadatmanam surijamyam. Whenever there is a rise in irreligion or adharma or negative actions, at that time I descend myself to promote the rise of consciousness, to recover spirituality, a practice of dharma, duty. Whenever it begins to diminish, I will call myself Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. So that means they also have to sometimes fight demons, dark forces or demoniac forces. Is there any such thing as demoniac forces in our day and age? Dark forces? Do they exist? Oh yeah, definitely. In fact, they're everywhere, but some places the concentration is denser than in others. We shall name none. And when Ram and Lakshman were here, they killed demons. They physically killed demons. What did they use to kill the demons? Tell me. Arrows. Weapons. They used weapons. Now, they also consecrated those weapons with mantra. Didn't Vishvamitra teach them mantra when he took them away when they were young and their father was beside them? I'll never bring them back. He was too attached. And Vasishtha, the family priest, said, calm yourself. Calm yourselves. Don't worry. They have to go. And they learned how to consecrate the arrows with mantra, and they killed very big and powerful demons, even from teenage years, when Ram and Lakshman were teenagers. It's a fact, right? So they used weapons. Then Krishna and Balaram came. They showed up. They kill anybody? Oh. Have you got the list? When they start, well, I think Krishna was a babe in arms. Yeah. Sucked the life out of our friend there. Putana. Putana Devi. And, well, she's a Devi exactly, but she is not, for sure. After she had the life sucked out of her. How did they kill the demons? Krishna and Balaram. How did they kill the demons? Bare hands. Bare hands. They need arrows? Oh, no. Don't need arrows. Not necessary. Would you like the spear? No, it's okay. They went to the big wrestling match in Mathura. Well, it was a big deal. I'm going to invite that Krishna and Balaram. We've got to get those guys somehow. Can't seem to get those damn guys. You know, we sent all these big demons to kill them in Vrindavan. They're all dead. Demons. God, this is so frustrating. I got to get them. Have a big wrestling match with Chanura and what's the other guy? Mushtaka. We'll have a big wrestling match and we'll kill those little kids. How old are they? Like 14 or something? 12? Yeah, you should be able to kill them. Did that work? No. Krishna and Balaram killed them with bare hands. Pretty good. Gets better. Chaitanya comes. Yeah, he's always ready for a good fight, isn't he, Chaitanya? No, that's not him. No. It isn't him, is it? Same guy. Oh, yeah. Same guy. Nityananda Balaram. He's there. Yeah, he's there too. Who'd they kill? Nobody. Oh, well, their whole thing, this you die, dharmasya, bit fell apart. No, didn't fall apart. They decided not to kill the demon. What, there's no demons here in Kali Yuga? We just established 5 minutes ago there were demons. You're probably related to a few of them. No offense. My mother could never say Krishna. She could only say Krishna. God bless her. She wasn't a demon, but she couldn't say Krishna. Yeah, there are demons, definitely. So how did Chaitanya kill the demons? He didn't kill any of them. He killed the demoniac mentality. That's why he's here. Chaitanya Nitai, to kill the demoniac mentality. And in the process, kill Noah. To convert the demon from being a demon into a devotee, at the very least, into neutral gear. If not, if he cannot become a devotee, if he refuses, then at least neutral. Stop being destructive, please. Now, you tell me, out of those three examples, Ram, Lakshman, Krishna Balaram, Chaitanya Nitai, what strikes you as a higher manifestation? I mean, who's won the lotto here? We have. We've won the lotto. We won the prize. We're all sitting here. And all you got to do is chant the holy name. Well, what do you mean? So I can kill some demons? Not exactly. So you can kill what? The demoniac mentality within yourself, my friends. Let's start with this guy here, who's creating a lot of different kinds of havoc from time to time. And I'm pointing to myself. He won't listen. I tell him over and over again. I've told him for years. Sometimes he listens, sometimes he doesn't. Son of a gun. So, who's got the golden opportunity here from the golden avatar? Who? Who's the one with the golden body? Gaura Anga. Golden body. Gauranga. What age did he come in again? Oh. Kali Yuga, your age. So who's coming with the mercy? Nityananda. The personification of mercy. Nityananda. The world's first guru. The guru among all gurus is Nityananda. Right? Jagai and Madai, of course, that's the famous story. Two drunkards, born Brahmins, causing all kinds of problems, chasing people, beating people up, getting drunk, stealing, carrying on. Sounds like a few areas in Dublin I read about in the newspaper. More than a few. God bless them all. God bless them all. And Chaitanya says, go chant the holy name, go spread the holy name to Haridas Thakur, who in everybody's eyes was a Muslim who had converted to Vaishnavism. Boy, that was deadly back in those days. Yeah, change religion. How dare you change religions? We'll fix you. Can't change religion. The problems they had between Muslims and Hindus back in that time were in some ways even greater than they are today. In some ways. So he said, yeah, go spread the holy name. Get people, go door to door and get people to chant Hare Krishna. And they approached two drunk guys. Well, if they would have asked me, I would have said, no, don't approach the two drunk guys. It's never a good idea. But they did. And even Haridas Thakur says, this guy, Nityananda, is going to get me killed. What's he doing? And they had to run away, and they were chased by Jagai and Madai. And at some stage, Jagai, I don't know which one it was now, he took the piece of a earthen pot and he threw it at Nityananda and he cut his head. He was bleeding. Well, when Chaitanya heard about this, he immediately appeared on the scene and he forgot himself. Momentarily, he actually forgot himself. Why? He was going to kill one of these demons. Jagai, Madai. For striking Nityananda with the shard of Klepa. And Nityananda said, no. No, no, Lord. This is not your Leela. This is not the Dharma that you have chosen to manifest in this age. No, we are not here to do this. Don't worry about this. So, Nityananda himself forgave. And that's what we must do. Jagai and Madai became great devotees. Great devotees. And because of the influence of Chaitanya Nitai. Many of us have become devotees because of this influence. We actually don't really realize to what extent this influence is there. My wife kindly pointed out to me the other day, I was talking about Prabhupada and saying something about what he had done when he was here. I saw him do it with my eyes many times. I felt it tangibly. And my wife said, yeah, but that's Prabhupada. Don't forget, Prabhupada's empowered. He's empowered. He's not just a man. He's empowered by God to do the things that he did. I said, oh yeah, that's right. He is, because a man wouldn't have been able to do that. Well, how do you know? By all the things he did? Yeah, well, all the things he did were pretty amazing, but no, you'd know just by sitting in the room with him. That's how you'd know. Just him standing there. He's standing there. He's bowing before the deity where he's playing cartels. Sitting up on the Vyasasana. You know. You could feel it. You could see it. It permeated everything. If he'd walk in the room right now, all this would just... it would ascend. The atmosphere in the room would ascend to another place. And you'd feel it. Everybody would feel it. Even non-devotees who were coming, oh, let's go see this guru, the Krishna guru. They all felt it. Many of them told me, oh my God, what just happened in there? Prabhupada came. Oh. How do I become a devotee? Go talk to that guy. He'll fix you up. When are you going to join today? Okay. Nityananda Ram, the grace of the Guru, first Guru. Radha says, if you want to enter into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, then you must win the favor and the mercy of Nityananda, the original Guru. You must be guided into the intricacies and the mysteries of Krishna Prema. Love of God. The Guru comes as Bahiranga or Antaranga. Or both. Most of us need the Bahiranga Guru. The external Guru. We need the guy there, sitting there. So we can talk to him. If you're a very advanced soul, maybe you could skip that. I don't know. The Antaranga Guru is the Chaitya Guru, God within the heart. If God is speaking to you directly within the heart, well, maybe you don't need the external. But my experience has been that's pretty rare. Pretty rare. Are there people like that? Oh, yeah. Sure. But it's pretty rare. So today we glorify Nityananda, the original guru. Nityananda Ram Avirbhava Mahotsava Ki.
Jai.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Questions? Contradictions? Comments? Prabhu.
It's also heard you say this. Lord Chaitanya was, he said he's 50% Vishnu Tattva.
No, I didn't say that. I said Lord Ram is 50% Vishnu Tattva.
And you said somebody is human as well.
Yeah, Ram. Ram is 50% human, 50% Vishnu Tattva. You can read that in the Vedas.
I thought it was 100%.
No. It's not. It's in Ramayana. No, they have different degrees of things, you know. And different degrees give you different potencies. What percentage of Vishnu Tattva is Shiva? You know he is, right? Do you?
Well, I thought that Shiva is Shiva Tattva.
No, Shiva is Vishnu Tattva.
84%.
75.
Well, the living entity is 78.
No, it's the Vishnu Tattva. You're talking now about the qualities of the Godhead. That's a different thing. The 108 qualities that you read about in the Nectar Devotion is what you're speaking about, and you're right in terms of those figures, but I'm talking about a different thing. Yeah, no, Shiva is, you know, he's the man. He's also the man. But Shiva, his control, his responsibility lies more in the material world. So Shiva is also always or also linked with Durga as the divine Shakti. But Durga is what? Yoga Maya or Mahamaya? Is she internal spiritual potency or external potency? Mahamaya is external potency, material potency. Very, very high manifestation of material potency, but not Yoga Maya like Lakshmi or Radha. Radha is the highest manifestation of the Yoga Maya. Even Krishna gets confused when he gets around Radha. He gets, if Krishna gets confused, where would we be, my friends? We can't even sort our way out of Mahamaya. So Durga is, she holds sway down here. That's why when you see the Hindus for the most part, you can correct me, my friends, worship Durga, Shiva, correct? Because Shiva is, why do they do that? He's Ashutosh, easily pleased. He'll give you what you want. Where? Material world. But I want stuff. Of course you do. Let's get some stuff. Where's Shiva when you need him? I'm teasing a bit. I like to be a little bit irreverent. They like that. They enjoy it. I know they do. Krishna loves it. He loves it. Why? Why would he love that stuff? Isn't God supposed to be formal? Krishna's not formal. He's familiar. He's familiar, right? Oh, there's this whole other part that I didn't read. Ram. What? Overcame. Thank you for that. And there's another one. Ram and Lakshman were Aishwarya. Aishwarya. What is Aishwarya? They killed demons, they ruled the kingdom. Aishwarya is opulence, power, supremacy, and formality. That's usually how we approach God if we're raised Christian or Muslim or Jewish, are we not? It's all very formal, bow down, very reverent. Something wrong with that? No. No, nothing at all. But we're in awe of the opulence of the Godhead and the power and supremacy of the Godhead. Should we be in awe of that? Yeah, on some level. Krishna Balaram, Aishwarya and Madhurya. So they also had the kingdom and all the trappings. So that was the power, supremacy, and awesomeness of the Godhead. Here's, you know, Krishna in battle. Tough guy to defeat. And they also had Madhurya. What does Madhurya mean? Sweetness. Sweetness. What is the Leela of Radha Krishna? Is it opulence and power and supremacy? Is that what you get when you look at that beautiful altar? Is that the vibe you get? No. Sweetness, intimacy, familiarity, fun, frolic. That's Madhurya. Which one do you like? Both are good. This is more fun. Madhurya. I'm putting my hand up for the fun part. Krishna, pick me. Pick me, please. Radha. Pick them too if they want to go. Don't you want to go? I want to go. I'm not coming back here. Mm-mm. That's my prayer. So, what did they do? Krishna Balaram killed demons, ruled the kingdom, and most importantly, danced with the gopis. Best part. Broke the butter pots, the yogurt, fed the monkeys, ran around, you know, carried on. Hooligans. Chaitanya Nitai. Kingdom, opulence, power, I don't think so. Madhurya. It was all Madhurya. It was all sweetness and beauty and divine taste, divine rasa. Krishna Prema, Krishna Bhakti. Wasn't that Chaitanya Nitai? Familiarity, intimacy, and love. Killed the demoniac mentality with what? Sweetness and love. Wow. What an inspiration for us, isn't it? How sweet and loving can you become? How forgiving? How compassionate can we possibly become? I don't know. But Chaitanya Nitai, it's Nityananda's birthday. Look at him. So the two things Chaitanya Nitai brought together and Chaitanya and Nitai. Sweetness and love. See, I'd forgotten that. Most important part, I forgot it. It shows you how dense I am. This conditioned by material life. What was I thinking? What wasn't I thinking? But Lord Chaitanya pulled me out of the fire at the last minute. Questions? Enough already, huh? Jai Nityananda Ram Ki. Jai Prabhu.
I was just thinking in relation to Vishnu Tattva and Lord, that question Tim was asking about Lord Ramachandra, and then the first verse in the Bhagavatam, 8-day Chamsakara, so all the incarnations are given, and then that verse says that all these are portions of plenary portions of the Supreme Person.
Exactly, Prabhu. Did you hear that? Portions. Or plenary portions. A portion of a portion of a portion of a plenary portion of Vishnu. Or of the Shakti. Whatever it might be.
Krishna is the Supreme.
Yeah, Krishna is Supreme. Ishvara. What is it? Ishvara. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Radir Govinda Saravakarana Karanam. Who spoke that? Haridas Thakur? No, Brahma. Same guy. Brahma, the creator's book, the Brahma Samhita. What did Arjuna say to Krishna? Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Devyam, Adi Devam. Ajam, people. Adi Devam, you are the original God. Ajam, unborn. And Vibhum, powerful. I kill demons with my bare hands, says Krishna. Of course you do. Nityananda, he kills them with love. Kill them demons with love. Kill that demoniac mentality with love. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Jai Nityananda.